All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Dr. Alex Show. I think I just committed a minor sin on podcasting and I clapped my hands, but I'm just kind of excited because today's topic is going to be about screens. And around here, we don't want to get into the controversy, but I'll get into a little bit of that just to expose parents to the possibilities of what can happen with screens and technology and what goes on with these things. And it's going to be a relatively shorter show. We're used to doing hour long, 45 minute long, even 2 hour long shows. But with this show, it's going to be relatively short. I'm going to try to aim around 30 minutes and go over the ins and outs, hard hitting facts of screens, kind of break it down. That way everyone understands the different facets of what screens are doing to our brains, adults and children alike. What are some projections that are going to be occurring potentially in the next, call it 20, 30 years or more? And most importantly, what all can we do about it? So when it comes to using screens and technology, it's obviously a great thing. You are not going to catch me without using my phone or my computers. And I'm sitting here in a studio just surrounded by it. I mean, for crying out loud, I'm looking into an iPhone that has better camera capability than a lot of cameras on the market. And producer Nick and I were just talking about that. You spend $1,000 on a phone and you have one of the best cameras, or go spend $20,000 on a camera and you still have the same quality. Technology is amazing. So with that, this is not about bashing technology. This isn't about going and re-dipping yourself in an Amish community. This isn't about just pulling the plug on technology. And this is not about also a situation like, oh, Dr. Alex and Dr. Lauren, they don't have their kid on technology. No, that is definitely not the case. But I will go over what we do with our son and what works for us. And then I'll have plenty of other suggestions for parents, because that's what we're most concerned about. We should be concerned about our own brains, but also what are the parents most concerned about is what we'll go over the things that can be done about all this. So first and foremost, when it comes to these screens, just pulling up some notes here, I want to break it down. First of all, is the physical aspect of the light. So when it comes to screens, particularly our phones and our computers, that's primarily what I'm talking about. I can go into TV maybe near the end of this. But when it comes to these devices, it lets off blue light. What you have to know about blue light is that it creates a very excitatory response in the brain. It is a high frequency, high energy color in the order of the rainbow, Roy G. Biv. The rainbow goes from low to high energy, and blue light is particularly very high, very energetic, and it will cause a lot of extra activity in the brain. If one is concerned about sleep, I would say you don't want to be on any screen or really watching screens, even TV, in the evening time, for that simple fact of that extra blue light activity that's created in the brain, from the blue light. And to top that off, blue light from screens will actually dampen melatonin production in the brain. So kind of the first hit, if you will, that this might be a depressing episode for everyone, and I'm sorry, but hit one is we all want to sleep better. There's very few people in my life that have just, call it the really good sleep, 4 out of 5 nights, or call it 6 out of 7 nights out of the week, or 5 out of 7 nights out of the week. So to help everyone sleep, screens before bed, definitely a big no-no. I would say one of the best action steps you can do right now is to turn the evening time into as much production time with family as possible. One of the best bits of history, and that interview should still be out there, is if you watch the interview with Steve Jobs, and he's getting interviewed by this reporter, and this isn't verbatim, but she basically goes, yeah, so how many iPads do your kids have? Like one for each room in the hallway, and like go down the bathroom, and then there's one there too. And I mean, you got to have two for the car, right? Two, right? And he goes, no, no iPads. And she goes, what do you mean? And she goes, so what do you guys do at dinner? You know, what do you do? And she goes, we get their books out and we talk about what they learned at school. And the whole point of this is Steve knew exactly what he was creating when he helped create the awesome technology we have. But not going into what was going through his mind, it's just that he knew that it was not going to be the best thing for him and his family to have their attention clouded by these devices. So did he have devices at dinner time? No. Did he have devices in the evening? No. Did they have devices? Absolutely. You're talking about the creator of some of the best technology on the planet. Of course he did. But when it comes to technology at nighttime, the first best step, one way or another, start decreasing it. If your kid or you are locked and loaded and you are doom scrolling or you are doing something with your child on a screen every night like a game, you got to push that time back. If bedtime is 9, they shouldn't be on a screen from 8 to 9 or 7 to 9 or 6 to 9 or whatever that number is for you. Because one thing is that we're going to go into next is screens are addicting. And I don't know if it's going to be the best thing to just pull the plug if you have a child who's playing a game or doom scrolling or doing something mindless on a screen before bedtime. That may not go well. There's going to be signs of aggression and issues and behaviors that are going to pop up. And as parents, you'll have to figure out what is the best way to go about that. But just by starting by decreasing the time will be a good start. So again, when it comes to that blue light, it's very excitatory for the brain. At nighttime, it's particularly not good because it's going to decrease your brain's ability to make melatonin. We need melatonin to sleep and stay asleep. And again, I don't know many people that are getting just the best of sleep all the time. So one of the best things you can do is turn that screen off, roll over. If you're in bed with your partner, talk to them. I mean, get off Instagram for crying out loud. And for the kiddos, I am not a teenager, but I don't think teenagers should have a phone in their room at night at bedtime. Even with parental locks and all that stuff, when it comes to screens and teens, one of the next best bits to probably instill in your house that we will one day is that our son, Kuiper, kind of like it's Dutch for Cooper, if you were ever curious. Kuiper will never own a phone. He will never own a computer. He'll never own a device. If he wants something, we will buy it. And the reason that we're going to buy it, even though he could earn it, he could go and he could spend his money on it. We won't let him because we are going to own it. Because if we are the owners of that device, then it's ours. And at that point, we are not invading his privacy. So that argument goes out the window. And then two, if it is ours, we can take it at any time. Even if he's the best kid on the planet and he just comes home from school, if I want to take it and toss it momentarily in the trash, I'm going to do it. If he had the worst day ever and he definitely does not deserve that device, I'm going to take it. So probably the best thing you can do is it is not their phone. You can call it their phone, but it is your phone or it is your device, just like everything else, unless they buy it in your household. But probably one of the best things you can do is you own the device. It is not invading their privacy. And you are the parent. And I'm going on a bit of a soapbox, definitely going out of order on notes here. And as a parent, you are not invading their privacy. You are protecting them. Because probably the best place, for instance, to get recreational drugs nowadays for teenagers is Snapchat. And for all those teens out there listening and all those people that are on Snapchat, don't think for a second that anything you put on there just disappears. That's not how the internet works. That's not how servers work. That's just not how data works. It's out there. Rest assured. I promise you it's going to be there. So when it comes to those, when it comes to screens at nighttime, teens especially, to avoid growing distant with your teenager. And again, I am not the parent of a teenager, so please do not take offense to this as someone who doesn't have a teen yet, giving people advice about this. But we do give this advice out every day in office, is don't let them have it. If they need an alarm to wake up, then they can buy their own alarm clock, or you can get them an alarm clock, or you can be that fun parent and throw a pillow at them in the morning, whatever you got to do. And it'll help them sleep, and it's going to give them a good excuse to talk to you. And that brings up the next best thing, which is off on the soapbox, or I'm still on the soapbox, is talking to your child or talking to your teenager. Because part of using technology is it's very convenient when, as parents, we're busy. A lot of us are business owners. We are single parents. We do not have family or friends around us to help. For instance, here, Lauren and I, we run this office. She has a second job. I'm busy with other things. I have family around, but they're busy. They're business owners. Do we need a crutch, and do we need a time for Kuiper to take an hour on a video game? Yeah. Are they highly supervised games that actually I go through first to make sure everything's hunky-dory? Yeah. So when it comes to all of this, and limiting your time on a screen with, or limiting your child's time on a screen, it's going to set up time to talk. And if you want to talk more with your child, ask direct questions. How was school today? That's not going to get you anywhere. How about, what was something you learned today? What was something fun? What was something that occurred that was unusual? How was this class today? How was this teacher? Asking specific questions, or start with opening statements like, hey, my favorite human, or hey, you are my favorite person that I'm responsible for until 18, whatever you want to say to them to start opening conversation. And this can be at bedtime or after school, or whatever works for you to be able to get more out of your kiddo. And rest assured, I think everyone's going to enjoy their time more anyway. But moving on, blue light, not good, overexcites the brain. That's also one reason why we all get tired when we're on screens a lot. That blue light just makes our neurons fire way too much. Visual receptors going back in that occipital lobe, a lot to process. And that brings up a good point here, people. We got a brain that weighs 3 pounds, but it's going to take 25% or more of our caloric expenditure, and it's going to take more than that if you keep a screen dumped in front of your face. It's going to be exhausting. So if you want more energy, for crying out loud, just shove it aside once in a while. It'll do you a favor. Probably help with the headaches too, if you have one. The other thing that this brings up is eye strain. People talk about eye strain, my eyesight's going bad, or I don't see off in the distance very well. Well, if you're like this all day, and I'm blocking the camera for a reason, because no one can see you, because you have stuff in front of your face, you're not going to see far out very well at all. People's depth perceptions are getting altered. This is some research that's coming out. People's driving abilities can be kind of questioned at times, possibly because of this. Because if we are constantly held within, call it a couple feet of our visual field, then we are not exercising our ability to see outside of that, and we will have visual issues or visual processing issues as we go beyond our usual scope, our usual visual field here. And that, again, is another way it'll contribute to headaches and overall feel lethargic, because your eyes are working very hard to adapt back to what they should be doing, which is looking out and beyond rather than just in front of you. Let's see here. Probably the biggest thing. This is where we get into a little bit of controversy, but this is why neurology is fun. And going down the line is social media. So social media, a lot of the social media, we are going to be scrolling upwards. I don't have my phone laying around, but as we're scrolling, we are going to be scrolling upwards. And did you know that vertical eye motions in the brain are very what's called dopaminergic. Don't cut that out. Dopaminergic, meaning it takes a lot of dopamine to produce that eye movement. And this is done for a reason, because dopamine is the pleasure neurotransmitter in our brain. And if we are scrolling and we're saying, hey, look what Susie's doing today. Oh, that's awesome. Like, or happy face, or whatever it is. Sorry, I'm not on social media too much. Move on. Oh, there's the next thing. Oh, got my next hit. Now I see what Mrs. Smith is doing with her kids in the holiday weekend. Scrolling on. Oh, now we see what Mr. Jones is doing over here. And oh, can you believe that they're doing this? Go on. Oh, I cannot believe she said that. That is horrific. Why would you say such a thing? Go on further. Oh my gosh, can you believe that? What is happening in Maui right now as we record this? Maui is on fire, unfortunately. And every time you scroll, you are using a lot of dopamine. So your brain is pumping out dopamine, getting pleasure and reward systems built up. And to top that off, how that social media is laid out and how things are posted and how things are presented to you is meant for you, and particularly meant for a brain to be addicted, to be addicted. There is no difference in the brain of addiction to drugs, addiction to alcohol, addiction to sex, addicted to rock and roll, addicted to caffeine, addicted to social media, addicted to video games. Doesn't matter. This is where addiction is addiction is addiction. The same areas in the brain are involved. And if we are constantly scrolling up, we're already getting primed. You mix that in with the fact that, to top off what gets controversial, thinking about the fact that social media companies, app developers, and people that make things for us to lose our time on devices, don't think for a second that there are not neuropsychiatrists that they consult with, or neuropsychiatrists on the board, or it is a neuropsychiatrist or someone of the like that is developing that app or that social media or whatever it is, because they want to be able to get you, because you are the product to get on social media, because the whole point of social media is to create ad space. That's why Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and all of these and TikTok, all of them have tremendous amounts of money behind them, because we are meant to get on there and stay on there as long as humanly possible to see as many ads as possible to buy stuff. And then you mix that in with today, the fact that, yes, it's not a conspiracy theory. Your phones, your devices, yes, they're listening to you 100%. And you mix that in with all of this garbage over here, you are going to have a 100% tailored for you experience to be on social media. And the whole point is to not just create life great for you. It is to get you to buy stuff and eventually get you on there. They probably have it down to, I don't know, a plus or minus 8-hour time window when that app developer knows when you will buy something. It's down to a science, and it's a scary science, but it's there. So with these upward eye movements, they're doing that for a reason. Just kind of a fun fact there with scrolling and social media and what it is doing to your brain from that neurological standpoint, priming things. Then you go into what these apps are meant to be, which is addicted. So that way you stay on there and spend money is pretty much what everyone's goal is. So then some of the topics that come up with screens are, okay, what do we do about parents that are just busy and parents that need time or need a second? 100%, I get it. when it comes to all of this, you will not catch Dr. Lauren or myself being hypocritical about this. Does, for instance, Kuiper get screen time and watch TV at home? Yeah. Does he have a Nintendo Switch that he busts out at this point once every couple weeks? Yeah. He's playing it this week. He has a half hour every day because we have to have him at the office because we don't have babysitters and school's about to start, and he's going to come and he's hanging out. He's also getting his own brain therapy, but he is going to have his half hour of his Nintendo Switch time of games that we've approved. Now, with all of that in mind, being that he's at the office, he's got this Nintendo Switch time, and then being fully transparent, we have smart TVs in the office when we are not performing a therapy. If he wants to use his TV time at the office, he can do that. However, does that mean he's going to get it at home? No. So when we get home tonight, him and I and Dr. Lauren are going to go out and play, and it's like 102 degrees and it feels like Georgia right now here in Kansas City, Missouri. But we're going to sweat and it's going to be kind of ugly, but we're going to be outside. So when it comes to screens and kiddos, first off, the best advice I can think of are this may not be sit right for the anxious parents, because a lot of parents can be anxious nowadays, is you need to wait as long as you can to get them a device. And that means wait as long as you can to get them, whether it's the phone or the iPad or the computer. Nowadays, most kids are going to be coming home with Chromebooks or iPads for kindergarten anyway. And a lot of times those devices stay somewhat open for basic recreational use. So you may not even have to spend money. Two, I don't think that kids need phones. I don't see a reason that a kid needs a phone. Parents in our office say, well, what happens if I need to get a hold of them? Well, if you need to get a hold of your 10-year-old and your 10-year-old is at school, then you go to the school or you call the school. If parents ask us when we're in office and their 10-year-old has a phone, in our office, any kiddo that is undergoing therapy is not allowed to be on their phone on their way to the office or their device, not allowed to be on their device on their way to the office while they're in the office, or they're not allowed to be on their phone on their way home from the office. So parents might say, okay, do we just leave it at home? Yeah, that sounds great. Well, what happens if I need to get a hold of them? Then you call the office. What happens if you don't pick up? Then you call again. What happens if you don't pick up? Then if there's anything wrong with your child or if there's anything going on, rest assured, we will let you know. But also, some of this just has to be put into perspective. 20, 30, 40 years ago, did you have a phone on you? Did your parents have something for you to take to school? No. What has changed? Well, a lot of things have changed in our society, and people have every reason to be a little worried about their child's location and all of that stuff. But does it mean they need to have a phone or a full-fledged device to be able to have access to quite a few things in this world that they shouldn't be seeing for quite some time? Yeah, probably not. That's where things like Life 360 come in and the smartwatches, which would be a great step to going into a phone. And then again, I would not let the child own the phone. I'd say parents own the phone. The phone needs to be owned by the king and the queen of the castle. That way it can get taken away or it can get controlled in any way, shape, or form. I mean, you can even lease it to him. If you want to make your kid pay for your phone because you want to instill that type of financial responsibility, then you pay for it and they pay you back. Throw the money back into an account and watch the interest grow. Interest rates are great nowadays. When it comes to screen time at night, if anyone that's listening to this is on a screen up until bed, up until sleep, like you're using it to fall asleep, I would suggest to start cutting back. So if your average time is an hour, then you want to start cutting that back to getting it down to a half hour or getting it down to 45 minutes or whatever the steps are for you. I would suggest that about a half hour is okay, but you don't want to be doing that right before bed. So get your time down, and then you have to back that time back. So if you're usually asleep by, let's say, 11 o'clock, that means you get your doom scrolling down from 10:30 to 11. Now you need to bump that doom scrolling down to like, or bump it back, sorry, to about 8 o'clock. And then that time from 8:30 to 11 is time to yourself. Great time to read, great time to talk with the wife or the husband. If kids are having a hard time, go snuggle up, go read them books, or enjoy some peace and quiet. Go on a run. No one has time to exercise, but if you're doom scrolling at 9:30 at night, you got time. When it comes to your child and they are doing the same thing, same steps, you want to get the screens away and then get the screen time down and then back off that time away from bedtime. When it comes to screens and the fully addicted, this is a topic I was thinking about going into. That could almost be a whole nother show. So this show, if parents need more help or more guidance, please do not hesitate to reach out. A great place to start, though, for these are the kids that are all out addicted. It is very disruptive for their life. You can read from 2016, Dr. Nicholas Cardaris's book, Glow Kids. And Glow Kids was one of the first books on the market to talk about that screens are addictive. They are, again, in the same area of the brain that's involved with addiction. That same area in the brain that's involved with addiction is getting used with screens. And for the ones that are having a very hard time, it's just a whole nother level. This show, some of this is for you, but getting your head wrapped around what you need to do to help your home or your lifestyle with all of this, please do not hesitate to reach out. Some of these steps may not necessarily help you so much. And with that, other resources on the internet, and again, I know I'm talking about the internet and not being thrown in front of a screen, it's being able to go and buy more books. Just having a page pulled up for screens and addiction or screens and kids and screens and safety, there's about 20 pages of things that have come up just on Google alone. And the books that have come up are Glow Kids, Screens and Teens, Drowning in Screen Time, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. That's one of my favorite. Stop Scrolling, Doom Scrolling, ScreenWise, Screen Smart Kid, Polly and the Screen Time Overload. Lots of great resources out there to be able to read up. My personal favorite is, again, this from Dr. Nicholas Cardaris, Glow Kids. Because it puts into perspective how bad things could go. So although all this is talking about the vast majority of us, there are a select few out there, relatively speaking, that are just terribly addicted to screens. Anywhere from 10 to 12 hours of game time a week for a 10-year-old is going to increase their chances of having school and behavioral related issues 1.6 to 2.1 times. Just, you're going up 60% just like that. When it comes to kiddos and being on a screen for about an hour a day for the time of 1 to 3 years old, this was a few hours a day from the time of 1 to 3 years old. It said later on in that study that their chances of being diagnosed goes up statistically significant, the number I do not recall off the top of my head, by the age of 7, which is right around when kids start getting diagnosed with ADHD. And that brings up our kind of my last point, which is, when it comes to screens, the reason that they're addictive is they are driving what's called the mesolimbic pathway. It means mesencephalon to limbic system. your mesencephalon is where dopamine is made. So big words, I'm sorry, but got to use them. Dopamine is made in that mesencephalon, and then it's going to go one of four pathways. We want it to go primarily one pathway for overall brain health. The rest of the pathways are needed. They're necessary. But if we go and we use screens or caffeine or games or whatever it is, we are going up what's called the mesolimbic pathway. So we go from mesencephalon to limbic system. If anyone who's listening knows what limbic means, it means emotional. We go from reptilian brain to emotional brain. So have you ever had your kid completely lose it when it's time to get off the device? It's because you go from reptilian brain to emotional brain. Have you ever had the kiddo lose it in school because maybe they were on their screens before they got to school? They went from reptilian to emotional brain. And with that, have you ever had the kiddo who just doesn't pay attention? It's because they're constantly in reptilian and or emotional brain. And that's because they're not firing off that mesocortical pathway, going from mesencephalon to the cortex, going to the brain, going to the frontal lobes. And it is this mesocortical pathway that is where creativity comes from. I'm sorry, these mesocortical pathways leads to other pathways to fire off, which leads to creativity, focus, concentration. It leads to emotional control, and it leads to better executive decision making, and overall, someone who is going to be happier. If someone is more in that mesolimbic state, this is going to be the person or the child who is going to be very reactive. They're going to be emotionally labile, easily triggered. They are going to have the ability to, quote, hyperfocus on their screen or that tablet or that game, whatever it is in front of them. Because when it comes to this usage in front of the screens, they are outpouring so much dopamine that when they are locked in on this screen, it's not that they're even in a what's called flow state or in the zone, as one would say when maybe you're on the baseball field or if you're performing an activity, a sports activity, or if you're performing your work. That child's not in the zone. Their frontal lobes are actually shut down for the most part. What's going on is their mesolimbic system is kind of running the show. But if we want to create a healthier flow state and get a developing brain to be able to move into a healthier focus and concentration state, such as flow state, which is the technical term, or in the zone, as it's called, then having a child away from the screens more often than not is going to be able to help that. Then lastly, when it comes to screens, something I wanted to get to, but just kind of losing time, is what was noted in Dr. Cardaris's book is the extreme usage of screens. I'm talking 6, 10, 12 hours or more a day. This is leading kids and adults to going to the bathroom as they sit, not drinking water, certainly not eating food, and I mean sleep, don't even think about it. But then what's happening in other countries, this is typically Asian countries, there are places just like in our country here in America where we have rehab centers for addiction. There are rehab centers for tech addiction over there because it's that bad. Because people are locked into these devices so long that their brains, their mesolimbic system, is the only thing that's firing, and we're talking mesocortical and everything else, is not helping run the show. So they do not know how to function in society anymore, and they don't know how to function without it because they get so much of their dopamine from that screen and that task at hand in front of them that they can't get pleasure from anywhere else or experience life in any way without it. And again, that is addiction. That's that person who's on the street, who's hooked on all the other terrible substances, LSD and meth and cocaine and all those other things that do the same thing to the brain, just from a chemical standpoint. The only difference here is we're doing it with this, with these devices that are in our face. And really the only difference between doing it a moderate amount and a crazy amount is eventually that moderate amount might get out of control, because addiction is addiction is addiction. Some people handle it better than others. So when it comes to the screen time and screen usage, what it's doing to the brain, I guess this show really wasn't about what can we do for our kids other than delay it, use them as least often as possible, put time caps on it, and use them for times when you need them, when you're busy, and take advantage of that. Use that technology for what it is designed for, and try not to be letting it turn into your child's lifestyle. The last bit that I just want to leave everyone with is the epidemic of ADHD that is going up. There is preliminary research that is coming out about if one is ADHD, they have more of a susceptibility to have Parkinson's. And everyone that's listening is probably like, how does that make sense? Because you go from ADHD, and your typical thought of ADHD is little Johnny who's bouncing off the walls going crazy, to old Johnny who is bent over, very what's called Camp DeCormick, can hardly walk, very what's called bradykinetic, moving very slow, has to use a whisper voice to talk. Not that they have to, but they can't because they've lost all of their ability to make dopamine. They talk slow, then they might even be cognitively slow, depending on if this is Parkinson's or Parkinsonianism. But essentially what's happening is with all of this artificial outpouring of dopamine, think of it as the system is getting tired, and people are projecting that there's going to be increases in Parkinsonianism or Parkinsonianisms, which is basically Parkinson's families of diseases, or Parkinson's disease, because Parkinson's disease is a dopamine-based problem. The brain's not producing dopamine, and why it's not producing dopamine can be a whole nother topic, but just something to think about is if we are artificially creating pleasure and creating way too much dopamine output into our brain, whether that's from screens or from whatever it is we're addicted to, because addiction is addiction is addiction, then that can lead to a increased chance of a neurodegenerative disorder later in life. And unfortunately, the best mathematicians who are doing the math for our public health officials currently are stating that if there's one thing that we're going to have a hard time with, it is supporting neurodegenerative disorders such as Parkinson's and dementia, and the most common form of dementia, which is Alzheimer's. So, quick recap. Screens, very excitatory. The blue light, too much neuronal activity that overexcites the brain. That's going to make you fatigued, going to make you irritable, headaches. It can lead to nausea, dizziness, you name it. It's going to decrease melatonin output at night. So try to decrease usage at night. Start going down and start going incremental. And as parents, do what you think is best if this is for your child. Then after you get down in time, then back that time off away from bedtime. Speaking of Steve Jobs and screen time at dinner, dinner is supposed to be dinner. Dinner is supposed to be deviceless. There really shouldn't be a reason that anything should be at the dinner table other than food and yourselves. Treat it like the South. Dinner's supposed to be social hour, right? Let it rip. I mean, make dinner like an hour or an hour and a half. It means your kids are going to be with you, or whoever you love the most is going to be with you and not off in their room, right? Then when it comes to kiddos and owning devices, kids don't own devices. You own the device. And then two, delay that as much as humanly possible. And start with the smaller stuff. start with things that only do games. For instance, we did a Nintendo Switch, and he touches that thing once a week. After these couple days before school starts, he's probably not going to touch that for 3 or 4 weeks, honestly. And that's not because we are telling him that. It's because Kuiper self-regulates himself. And that's because we try our best to make sure, for instance, that we are doing things outside of screens. We are coloring, we're drawing, we're creating. Does he want to go and take my lumber in the garage and nail down and screw down stuff and do crazy stuff? Yeah. Does it cost a lot of money because lumber is really expensive nowadays? Yeah. Do I care? No. Let it rip. $300 will buy you 8 weeks of fun, and he cuts and saws and drills and does all sorts of stuff. It's really funny. So then delay, go small steps, and do not let your child own. And then as for adults that are listening, consider cutting down the time greatly. And the time that you are not using on your screen, could you fill it with TV? Yes. Is that a better, worse step? Yeah. But go with what you know you should be doing, which is reading, talking with your spouse, creating, or doing something productive. Or in the end, all of this just means that none of us really want to be bored. Boredom's okay. Boredom is especially fine for your kids. That's probably the best thing that we can end on, is boredom is just fine. We are not always responsible for our child's entertainment, and we certainly do not have to be entertained all the time as adults either. If we find ourselves laying around and not having anything to do, I don't know about you guys, but take advantage of it, for heaven's sake. And if you're losing your mind because there's nothing to do, then get up and go on a walk. I'll talk to you guys later.